I'm Emily.
And I'm Tycho.
And we're friends, right?
Sure, I guess.
As much as two strangers on the internet can be friends. And like most friends, we try to influence each other's tastes.
And like most friends, sometimes that influence is for something good we legitimately love, and sometimes it's for something horrific and terrible.
And that's what you're about to hear. This is Lone Holdout.
Hey, Brinky.
Hey.
So there's this guy who's looking for work at the circus, right? And the guy who runs the circus, he asks the man what his talent is. So the man climbs to the top of the big top and jumps off. But before he hits the ground, he starts flapping his arms and suddenly begins to fly. And after flying around the big top, he lands next to the boss. And the boss says, "What, that's all you can do? Bird imitations?" I tell that joke because the Yahoo Answers forum has posed the question from Cincinnati LG. What was Hawkeye Pierce's on MASH favorite joke? And that was the best answer from Miss Kitty. Source, MASH. I have seen every episode of MASH a zillion times.
Well, I can't boast a zillion times. I have seen every episode. And in case you guys are wondering, that's our topic today. MASH, specifically the final episode from season 11, the series finale. So yeah, I'm not in love with the show, but I'll watch it. I'm not a rabid fan, but it's easy to like. I can fall asleep to it. But that really isn't the reason I'm bringing the recommendation to you today. The reason is that MASH, and especially this episode, are such a part of our culture, and it is still referred back to in modern references, that I think watching it will let you into that those references. I think it'll complete your education. So
yeah, and this was like the final episode of MASH was like the most viewed episode of television ever, and it stayed that way for a really long time.
Yes. So this show aired February 28th, 1983. So we're coming to it almost exactly 31 years later. It held the record as the most watched TV broadcast until 2010, when it was surpassed by the Super Bowl. It still holds the record for the most watched finale and the most watched non-sports program.
All right, well, there you go.
Yeah, and ads on this block of TV cost more than that year's Super Bowl ads. So it was very anticipated. Lots of people watched it. It is definitely a part of our zeitgeist, so I think it helps for you to have seen it and have formed an opinion about it. So that is what we're talking about and why. So tell me about what your experience with MASH was before you watched this.
I know my dad really liked it, and I knew it was a show. I could name like maybe two of the characters on it. And later on when I was 12 or 13, I knew the guy from Dragnet had been on it. Or maybe Harry Morgan had been on Dragnet before MASH. I'm not sure which one he was on first.
And he's in this episode as well.
Well, he's in every episode because he's...
Not really. He started in season 4, so he's...
Oh, okay. Again, don't know.
Not every episode.
Okay.
Although sometime in the first 3 seasons, he did play a different character. He was just kind of a wacky general that came on once. So...
Okay.
But yeah, Harry Morgan is wonderful, and we'll talk about him and how much I enjoy him a little bit later on. So
I was familiar with Harry Morgan from watching Dragnet when I was a kid.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, I watched Dragnet when I was a kid. the rest of it, the only really experience that I have with it is that I went to go see 42nd Street at the Fox Theater 3 or 4 years ago. And for those of you not familiar with 42nd Street, it is a Broadway musical from the 40s. And it's about an older Broadway actress who's done a lot of really good shows and a younger Broadway actress who's coming in, and the way they deal with each other and the way that the old generation views the new generation coming in. And it's about that kind of dynamic. The older actress when I went to go see it was played by, and I don't know her name, the chick who played Houlihan.
Loretta Swit.
MASH. Loretta Swit was in this production of 42nd Street.
Okay.
And I did not get to meet her or get her autograph or anything like that afterwards, mostly because I didn't know who she was.
When did you go to see it? How much like a kabuki mask was she looking at that time? Because she's not looking so hot these days. Lots of plastic surgery.
This was, I don't know, 4 or 5 years ago, maybe.
Okay. So probably so. Very much like a kabuki mask. She had already started her transition in 83 when this aired. So anyway, so the final episode of MASH is titled Goodbye, Farewell, and Amen. I think some people will also consider it a movie. It is 2.5 hours long. And it is the closer for season 11. And it aired in 1983 when you were just a little baby, Tycho, and I wasn't even born yet. So
that's true. I was. Well, I wasn't a little baby. I was 2.5 years old.
Yeah.
And if you believe my mother and my grandmother, already doing 24-piece puzzles.
Hmm. I bet you were so adorable. So the basic...
Sure. A little baby bridge troll. That's...
So the basic plot of this is that the Korean War is coming to an end, for real this time. They have had previous episodes where there were peace talks that didn't go anywhere. It's coming to an end for real this time. Everyone has to say goodbye. They have to figure out what they're doing next. And they're going to contemplate a little bit about the damage that has been done to them by the war and the thought of going home to the real world that's untouched by the war. So there's lots of different plot lines. You have Klinger falling in love and wanting to get married. You have Hawkeye, who has been traumatized and is in therapy. You have Charles really wanting to take, needing to take a dump and can't find a place to do it. Things like that. So,
question.
Yes.
Because I have not, this is really the only full episode of MASH that I've ever seen.
Okay.
Is Hawkeye's, therapy thing, was that just a start with this episode, or was that a carry on from something else?
That was pretty much just this episode. Now, the guy, his therapist, Sidney Friedman, is a recurring character. He's been on the show almost the whole time.
All right. See, in watching the episode, I was 99% convinced that we would find out at the end that the guy, that Sidney, was just a figment of Hawkeye's imagination, because I didn't know. I had no idea about any of the characters. I didn't know if this guy was a recurring character, and until Honeycutt was walking down the hallway talking to him and interacting with him, and I was like, well, that blows that theory. That's actually one of the notes I've got written down, is the phrase, well, that blows that theory. So
I guess that is something you're lacking in the context of the whole thing.
Yeah.
And I mean, and there are lots of moments throughout this finale where they harken back to very old things. At one point, Charles and Hot Lips are having an argument, and she talks about him having touched his nose during surgery. That's a very old argument that they had a long time ago. They show a picture of Klinger in a dress. Well, Klinger hasn't worn dresses for several seasons at this point.
Did he used to routinely wear a dress?
So the character of Corporal Max Klinger, is the idea is that he wants to get out of the army on a Section 8. He wants to be declared crazy so he can go home.
Okay.
And so in the first several seasons, he did this by cross-dressing. And since the show is set in the Korean War, 50s, cross-dressing for a man is kind of a big deal. So after about the third season, the show was still considered a comedy, but they started doing more serious work. And so after about the third season, they started to drop the plot line of the guy in the dress, especially once the company clerk, Radar O'Reilly, left the show, and they made Max Klinger into the company clerk, and he just started wearing the normal uniform. So they did make references, a couple of references in this episode to him having worn dresses. They showed a picture. When he gets married toward the end of the episode, she is wearing his wedding dress from an earlier marriage to a woman where he wore a wedding dress. So, yeah, it harkens back to a lot of very old moments. And so in a way, it is kind of a very finale show. They have to tie up everything, all the loose ends, even if that means failed attempts at humor, even if that means sometimes it's kind of boring. One thing I was thinking about is that watching this for us 31 years later is not going to feel the same way it felt for our parents or people of that generation. You know, we don't have the feeling of saying goodbye to a show that's been on for 11 years.
Right.
And maybe that's a good thing, because then we can just judge it on what it is really without all the emotion.
I think we do have analogs to that. We don't have, like, we don't have the great, you know, it's not a great big cultural thing, but within our own little world, the final episode of Mystery Science Theater 3000,
okay,
which had been on for 10 years
yes.
at that point, you know, or the final episode of The Office. I don't know if you watch The Office or not, but the final episode of The Office was, you know, that was a pretty big moment, mm-hmm. you know, so it's not like the same kind of cultural thing, but like the same kind of effect that it had on people who were like, if you just take the microcosm of one person's little world, and you said, this is the effect that the final episode of MASH had on them. And then take the microcosm of another person's little world and say, this is the same effect. It's the same effect that the end of House had for somebody, okay. you know, like my friend Rowan has not yet watched the last episode of House. I know people who didn't watch David Tennant's final episode of Doctor Who for a long time because they were like, oh, I don't want to say goodbye to David Tennant. Aww. And I'm like, just shut up and watch the stupid show. You know, it's like
I heard like, a very I, short I clip asked, of David Tennant turning into. Oh no, I'm sorry. It was Matt Smith turning into Peter Capaldi.
Peter Capaldi, yes.
What do you think of this knowledge dropping?
Well done. Good job.
And I heard a very short clip of it on International Waters when I listened mm-hmm. recently, and it was very moving. Like, so, I can kind of tap into that a little bit, even though I'm not a fan and I've never seen a complete episode. So I know what you mean, but you and I don't have that same kind of emotional investment in MASH the way people of our parents' generation did. And so you and I can pull back the lens a little bit and look at this for what it really is and see its weaknesses and strengths and overall importance now. So, right.
And you had a little bit of an advantage going into it because you've seen MASH before.
Yes.
I had not seen any of it before, and I wasn't really familiar with any of the characters. I didn't know who anybody was, and here I am being thrown into the last episode. So I'm watching it, and I'm like, I can get it, and in the final series of scenes, I'm going to jump ahead to the end there, if that's all right.
Okay.
In the final series of scenes, all of the characters are saying goodbye one by one to all of the other characters, saying, thank you for your work here. That was all. I appreciate you being here. You were a godsend, and all this sort of really nice, touching stuff. And I can understand that, and I can see how that was going, and I can understand how somebody who had watched the show and stuck with it for 11 years would feel watching all of that. So I can get all that. And so I can understand all that, but for me personally, I had only known them for like these 2 hours, and I'm like, bye. and it's the same thing that like I was going to say earlier before we went off on the whole Doctor Who thing. Rowan has not yet watched the last episode of House, and she's like, I don't want to watch it. And it's just sitting there on her DVR, and she hasn't watched it. And I'm like, why aren't you going to watch it? She's like, because after that, it's over, and there's not going to be any more new shows after that. And I was like, there's not going to be any more new shows anyway. You've already watched the last episode. If you're not going to watch this one, what's the point?
So she's just kind of stretching out that relationship as long as possible.
Yeah, well, I guess. I mean,
now, do you think there's anyone listening
like
who is?
She hasn't, like, the last episode of House aired like a year and a half ago. All right. And she hasn't watched it yet. So I'm like, you haven't seen House for a year and a half. Why not just shut up and watch it and be done with it? Like, I am half convinced that if I hadn't been there watching The Office with her, she still would not have watched the last episode of The Office.
I think you have your answer. I think you need to sit down with her and hold her hand and force her to watch House.
I've tried.
Now, do you think there's
she
anyone watching who is trying to stretch out the relationship with MASH so much that we need to go ahead and say, spoiler alert?
Spoiler alert, the Korean War ends and everyone goes home.
I've been waiting 31 years to watch this show. So you were able to watch it cold. You were able to see all the weaknesses and strengths with
yes.
no emotional backdrop. Tell me about the things you did not like.
I was like, I tried to watch it last night, and owing to a combination of not having any idea what was going on, or who was who, or what their relationships were, or and also being super tired and kind of falling asleep at the beginning, I was like, nope, this isn't working tonight. I can't do this.
So you found it boring?
I initially found it boring. I watched it again tonight. You know, like I told you before the podcast, I had slept pretty much all day, so I'm kind of up for the rest of the night now, which is gonna suck, but there it is. So I had watched it just before coming on to record, and I watched it all the way through, and I was more involved with it this time. I was able to follow it easier. Even not knowing anything about it, and this being the final episode, I was able to figure out everybody's character more or less within the first few minutes.
Now, did you get a lot of laughs out of this?
I got a couple. There were a couple laughs that I got from jokes that Hawkeye made, and I don't remember either of them at this point. But I did. There were a couple points where I laughed. One of them. One of the subplots of the show is there's a tank that comes charging into the complex, and so these Koreans are trying to blow it up, and they'll fire three mortars and then run away, and then come back and fire three mortars and run away, and
I think
and
you
he
might
makes it,
right, you might say the same line that I wrote down.
What's because I don't remember it right now. What's the
mortar merrier?
That's it. Yeah. Yeah. I enjoyed that one.
Yeah. So there's.
And also
there
because he's the only one who laughs at
it. Yeah. And everyone else kind of looks
like,
at each other awkwardly.
Barrier. Yes. And everybody's just staring at
yeah,
him.
Yeah. The comedy comes from everyone feeling really awkward. Kind of like there's this at the very end where Hawkeye and Hot Lips are saying goodbye and they kiss and just keep kissing. And everyone's expecting it to end. And it just doesn't. And everyone eventually just starts kind of looking at each other and shuffling their feet and walking away one by one. So the comedy there is in the awkwardness that they're creating for everyone mm-hmm. else. So, yeah, there are a few mm-hmm. laughs. Not a lot, even though this is ostensibly a comedy show. But like I said, they got more serious at times. And it can get this episode can get boring at times because they're trying to tie up all of those loose ends. And so it's very story driven without the laughs that we have come to expect. It is 2.5 hours long. Originally, the thought was that it would be an hour. But the writers wanted to give themselves complete freedom to say everything they wanted to say. So all the storylines are wrapped up completely. Now that leads to a few moments of boredom. But
some and I would argue some of the subplots don't like could be excised completely.
Right.
They don't need to be there. Winchester has this whole subplot about the Chinese musicians.
Oh, you didn't like it?
It's not that I didn't like it. I mean, it's a nice little moment for Winchester that he's got these guys that he's teaching Mozart to, and he's
these are prisoners of war that are hanging out at their camp.
Right.
And he's teaching them to play.
They're not actually soldiers. They're just civilians
yeah.
that he ran across. They're Chinese civilians that he ran across, and they're musicians, and they happen to know how to play Mozart. So he's trying to conduct them to play Mozart really well. And when he sends them all off, they all get in a truck and they're playing Mozart as they drive away. And he's all, and then later on, like the truck apparently had gotten attacked and all the musicians have been killed,
And it really touches him to the point where
yeah.
up till now he's been worried about where he's going to do his resident or where he's going to end up after the war. He wants to go to Boston. He wants this certain position. And it stops mattering quite as much. And he starts thinking about maybe doing more with music as well and fulfilling a need that's not just prestige as the leading cardiothoracic surgeon at Boston General.
Yeah, but then he goes and accepts the position of head of cardiopathy at Boston General anyway.
He's never not going to do that. So,
okay, well, so then that whole subplot could be excised and we wouldn't be missing anything from the episode.
Yeah, that's possible.
So, So it's a nice little moment. It's a nice little character moment. It's like in this series of video games that I've been obsessing over lately. The Tales games have these little things called skits in them that don't affect the plot at all. They don't do anything. They're just nice little character moments of characters having these conversations. And you can go the entire game without seeing them. They won't affect the plot at all. But there's these nice little character moments that take up time and add to your game time, and oftentimes are boring. So, you know, it's just a nice little character moment. But if you wanted to make the episode shorter, you could have taken all that out. You didn't need that whole plot.
That makes sense.
And so you had that. The subplot of looking for, what is her name? Soon Lee, is that her name?
Soon Lee, I think.
Soon Lee, okay. Looking for her parents brings about the wedding between Soon Lee and what's
Klinger.
His name?
Yes.
Klinger. Thank you. Obviously, I don't know. I'm sorry. The only reason I remember Winchester's name is because he's named after a rifle.
Okay.
It ties into their wedding, so I can understand the importance of that. I did want to bring this point up, though. The joke about the short being short and having dark hair, is that racist?
I don't think so. She didn't say almond eyes and Korean. They speak Korean or anything, but I mean, I can. Some of the humor fell flat, so it's hard to know, really. I mean, this is.
Yeah, because like the joke there is. Soon Lee is looking for her parents, and she's got Klinger on the radio, talking to various other people, various other branches of the military that are around there. And he says, "Describe your mother." And she goes, "She's short with dark hair
and dark eyes."
And he's short. She's short with dark hair. All right, describe your father. He's short with dark hair. Yeah, he's short with dark hair. And the joke there is. You know, all Koreans.
It does kind of come off as they all look alike, which is known to be a racist trope. So. I can see what you're saying there. I didn't take it that way, but I'm not short with dark hair. So maybe it doesn't affect me that way.
So, again, that was, you know, the early 80s, late 70s, early 80s, which is about the same. Was that about the same time, or was that later than Archie Bunker, who was like one of the most horrible racists that's ever been on television?
I'm not really sure, unfortunately. I don't know a lot about that show, but.
Okay.
So we've talked about tying up all the loose ends and also pulling out lots of old references. Now this brings to mind a show that you and I are watching right now that we both like a lot. And that's How I Met Your Mother, which is in its last season. So they are also doing the same thing. And we're kind of watching it as it unfolds, pulling out lots and lots of old references and attempting to tie up every single loose end. So it got me thinking about finales and how they kind of have to follow a formula where if you have a beloved show that's been on for a long time and you're ready for it to end, how do you do it? And do you have a favorite finale of anything you've ever watched? I mean, this one is very iconic. So is like the Seinfeld finale. You've got Saint Elsewhere, that's very iconic.
You take that back.
I'm not talking back. About.
I've watched a grand total of about two episodes.
I'm not
of
talking
Seinfeld,
about personally beloved.
I don't find it interesting. I find Seinfeld to be boring as hell. And I saw the final episode, and I was like, "This, I don't care about this at all."
I'm not talking about ones I personally love, but I'm talking about iconic ones that people know. So they know this. They know Seinfeld. They know Saint Elsewhere. They know. Did the Dallas episode where we find out who shot JR, that wasn't a finale, was it?
No. That was not a, no.
Which used to hold the record for watched episodes before MASH beat it. So there you go. But, so.
Do I have a series finale?
Yeah.
There's something. You know what? Sports Night had a really good series finale, but then I will say, you asked me to put me on a list of favorite anything, and I'll say Sports Night.
Well, that's true.
Avatar, The Last Airbender, was pretty good. I'm looking at my TV shows that I've got on
So that got me to thinking, is it better to have a kind of boring tie up everything finale, or to have a show that's pretty amazing and that ends up getting cut off in its prime, possibly on a cliffhanger?
Sports Night was one of those shows that got cut off. They had a whole third season story arc all planned out and ready to go, but it ended at the end of its second season because of both ratings and because Aaron Sorkin was doing Sports Night and The West Wing at the same time, and he kind of had to choose between the two, and probably wisely chose to go with The West Wing. So Sports Night ended after its second season, which was a tragedy because Sports Night was so much better.
So what do you prefer, a show that ends up getting cut off while you still love it and want more, or a show that kind of goes on and then gets a very planned but maybe boring finale that answers every question?
I know a lot of people have mentioned that the last couple of seasons of How I Met Your Mother have kind of wandered a little bit, and they've taken their time and they've, you know, putzed around and not really done any sort of plot advancement toward meeting the mother. But the last two seasons have been more focused on Barney and Robin's relationship, because that is kind of the linchpin of how Ted met the mother.
Right.
So I'm actually okay with that whole thing going on.
Mm-hmm.
And I think How I Met Your Mother has actually remained one of the strongest shows through its entire run. It had a couple dips, it had a couple not really great episodes, but for the most part, it's been a really good show for its entire run.
Well, and that's that's similar to MASH in the sense that there's so much of it that you can find something to love, even if there are some points that don't hit with you every single time. You don't have to love every episode, but there are so many to choose from. There are plenty to love. And MASH was on for 11 years, representing a 3-year time period, because the Korean War was only 3 years long.
Mm-hmm.
And I noticed that created a few awkward moments in this episode that we watched, because they couldn't really pin down a time period. They would say 2 years ago, they would say a long time ago, but this thing has been going on for a while. I mean, the actors have been together 11 years, but the characters have only been together 3 at most. So I found that kind of interesting too, that the end of MASH represents saying goodbye to characters you've known for 11 years. It's more emotional for the viewer on the character than the characters together, because they haven't known each other as long.
But, I mean, 3 years is still time enough to form a fairly deep relationship. I've known Rowan for four years. So, you know, and we're pretty close friends, you know, and that's, you know, four and a quarter, I think, at this point, years. So.
Yeah, and working in a MASH hospital in a foreign country, I think, is kind of an isolated place you can form tight friendships, because there's nowhere else to go. So that's possible too. So maybe you proved me wrong there. And I think there are a lot of touching emotional moments between characters. And that brings me to wanting to talk about strong points and things that we did like about this episode. So we talked about how it's 2.5 hours long because the writers didn't want to limit themselves, and they wanted to be able to say everything they wanted to say and wrap up every story. And I think the good thing about that is that you can have moments that are funny. And we talked about some. There were some pretty funny moments. Like when Klinger is asking Colonel Potter, do you have a minute? And he asks him, do you understand women? And he says, oh, what I know about women will take a lot less than a minute.
Yeah.
So some good lines. But also, I think there were moments that were deep and shocking. And we'll talk about the conclusion of Hawkeye's therapy here in a minute, because that is probably the biggest part of why I needed you to watch this. Also, there were things that were moving. The most moving thing was not the chicken and the baby, but it was when Colonel Potter is saying goodbye to his horse. And he says, "This isn't easy for me to tell you. I guess we'll both be homebodies from now on. I'll be weeding Mildred's nasturtiums, and you'll probably end up pulling some farmer's plow. Well, that's good, solid work." And we talked about Harry Morgan, and I thought he was so good in the scene. And he was understated and stayed within his acting abilities. Now, you're an actor, or have acted.
Yeah.
How important is it to stay within your abilities?
I am an actor who has been cast in several musicals, sometimes as the lead role. And I can go ahead and tell you that singing and dancing is outside of my abilities, and I should not be allowed to do that ever under any circumstances. The amount of work that I put into, I was in a production of Bye Bye Birdie. I was playing Albert, who is the lead role, and he sings the iconic, everybody knows it and loves it song, Put on a Happy Face. So it's like,
give
this
us
is
a few
song
bars.
That everybody, what?
I said, give us a few bars.
Nope.
Oh, come on.
Nope.
I'll cut it. I'll put it at the end over the closing music.
Nope. And so everybody loves this song. One of my friends who I've done shows with before came up to me after the show and she said, "I want you to know that Put on a Happy Face is one of my favorite show tunes of all time." And I said, Oh God, what did I do? And I said, I'm sorry. I didn't do very well. She's like, "No, you did it great." And I was like, "Okay, thank you. All right. I'm glad. Thank you." Because I was like, "Oh my God, she's about to rip into me for screwing up one of her favorite songs ever." And like the amount of work that I put into learning those songs and learning the dances and all of that was just like the hardest I've ever worked for anything ever. Because I was like, "I don't want to screw this up." And like, I'm not a good singer and I'm not a good dancer and I'm barely a good actor. So it's like, there's that.
Well, did any of your roles require something really serious emotion? Because I think that's because doing a comedy, I'm not an actor, so I can't really say comedy is easy. Emotional stuff is less easy.
Most of the time, the roles that I have played have been character roles. Like I'm very definitely a character actor. I'm not like a leading man actor. I'm like, give me a role that requires some sort of weird little quirk and I will find that quirk and I will exploit it to the best of my abilities. Give me a Neil Simon character, specifically the frantic, crazy Neil Simon character. And that is right in my wheelhouse. And I will hit that role out of the park every time. But I cannot think off the top of my head of anything that has required me to be emotional or weepy about it. I think the closest I've ever come to that, I played Bob Cratchit in a production of Christmas Carol when, you know, Christmas future, Tiny Tim Tiny Tim's dead and they're just, his wife is sewing the funeral clothes and he's come back from work and life sucks and blah, blah, blah. And you have to, you know, and you have to get that across there. And Bob Cratchit is a very complex character. He plays a lot of different emotion throughout the show. I've also played Ebenezer Scrooge, which is a very complex character. And I've also played, I've done a lot of productions of Christmas Carol. And I've played in Christmas Past, young Ebenezer, who gets, his fiance breaks up with him like on Christmas. She's like, "I don't want to marry you. You care too much about your work. So I'm breaking up with you." Why are you laughing?
I don't know.
Quit laughing.
I'm just imagining you having to tap into a font of misery and anger. And
oh no, this was
I
before
can
the
see it?
This no, hold on. This was before the misery and anger.
This oh, was, okay.
okay. This
is
was before the last 5 years.
This is
so
before you were a broken man.
Yeah.
So you
and
can...
you're laughing, but it's we're not joking here. Anybody listening, Brinky's laughing, but we're not joking. This is not a joke.
So, so you can appreciate Harry Morgan's acting in that scene.
Yeah,
I thought that was very moving.
And it may actually be a case of the show is ending, and he's like, again, I don't know. Has the horse played an important part on the show?
It's his horse. I mean, he likes horses.
Okay.
He,
he may actually be emotional about this. He may actually be like, well, I've been working with this horse. I actually kind of do love this horse. Don't laugh. This happens. All right.
Yeah. Bonding with horses? Oh,
yeah,
no. Uh-oh.
Ask the McElroys. The McElroys will tell you.
Oh, I'm just thinking about you turning into a brony right now. So
I'm not a brony. First of all, fuck you. Second of all, there is a difference between being a brony and liking horses.
And bonding with a horse.
So, don't cook naked, everybody. Good night.
Nope. So, yeah, I thought there were a lot of moving scenes. Another one that really stood out to me was they were having a party at the end. Kind of a going away party, but they made it into a birthday party for one of the little girls from the orphanage. And also for BJ's daughter, since he couldn't go home for her birthday. And Hawkeye is watching this little girl blow out a birthday candle and looking really wistful. And I thought he played that scene, understated, but well.
Yeah.
So, yeah, a lot of emotions that come up. Thought-provoking was another thing that they were able to pull out a few times. Especially the scene where BJ and Hawkeye are talking about how they're never going to see each other again, probably. Because they were doing the thing that you do. Hey, I'll call you. Hey, we'll get together.
Mm-hmm.
And they were saying, actually, that's probably not really going to happen. And even if it does, it's not going to be the same.
And here's how removed we are from 1983, or even from the Korean War. Is I sat there and my first thought in my head was, well, they'll still have Facebook and Skype and cell, you know, and they'll be able to talk on, you know, on phones and everything, of course. And then I realized, no, they don't.
I think nowadays there are enough things that help people feel close. I mean, I think you and I we're friends, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, we've got...
As close as two strangers on the internet can be friends.
Exactly. And we've known each other like a couple of years, kind of, you know, through Facebook and whatnot. So, yeah, I think you can be close to someone who's far away nowadays, but that probably wasn't really an option in the 50s so much.
Right, yeah.
But also the idea that even if they did get together and hang out with each other's families, it's not going to feel the same as it did hanging out every day in their tent. So,
yeah.
So that was kind of sad and thought-provoking as well. So the 2.5-hour time frame kind of made it so that you could feel a lot of emotions going through this thing. So what did you like about this?
One of my favorite moments, and it has nothing to do with the story, with the emotion, with the plot. It's just this weird little thing that happened. Honeycutt is painting a bike.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end, he puts the lid on the paint can and bangs it down with his fist. And when that happens, paint splatters everywhere, including on the camera lens.
Oh, I didn't see that.
Did you not?
No.
I actually like rewound it to watch it again and be like, did that really just happen? And I watched it and I was like, wow, that was kind of cool that was in the show, because you don't really think about that sort of thing happening. And it was like, wow, that was kind of awesome. And I really enjoyed that.
And things like that are kind of why MASH was such a cultural phenomenon too, was it tried new and groundbreaking things. It tried a point of view episode at one point from the point of view of a wounded soldier. So it was just him on the stretcher, him in the operating room, him going under the anesthesia mask. There was an episode where a very beloved character dies at the end. I mean, he goes home and everybody's celebrating. And then you find out at the very, very end, in the last couple of seconds, that his plane got shot down and there were no survivors. And that was pretty much unheard of in that time period, killing off a character in a comedy. So, yeah, they tried a lot of different things, and I guess some of them worked out. Like, maybe we're kind of jaded these days because there's so much amazing cinematography, and there's so many years and years of backlog that you can go through of all different shows that tried new things. But you see something that's tried out for the first time, and it's kind of interesting to see.
One of the things that I liked about this, which was one of the things that I like about How I Met Your Mother, was they'll present something that happened, and then somebody else will say, no, no, it was like this, and then they present the same scene with the same lines, but in a completely different way.
You are segueing me right into the most important part, and that is the chicken and the baby, which is what I thought you were going for when you were talking about bird impressions at the beginning. Hey, I picked that out because of the chicken.
No. The whole first, is it the first half of the episode or maybe the first third?
The chicken and the baby moment drops like halfway through the episode.
Yeah.
Which I thought it was going to be at the very end because it's so iconic. It's the most memorable, shocking, most often spoofed moment of this show. So.
And it's I would argue the most spoofed moment is anytime the MST guys see a helicopter, from a helicopter view, they do the MASH theme until Joel forbids them to do it anymore.
So that's spoofing MASH. But as far as this specific episode, and this is the reason I picked this for you to watch, so that you can get chicken and baby jokes. Did you know about this going in or no?
I didn't know about that going in. It was a whole big thing.
Yeah.
And every time, because Hawkeye would sit there and he's telling the story to Sydney.
He's in therapy because he got traumatized. And he doesn't know why he's there, supposedly, because he's repressing some terrible memories.
And he's telling the story about how they went to the beach and they were having this really great party. They all get back on the bus and they're going home. And he's like, hey, pass that bottle back here. This guy needs some.
They
pass this liquor bottle back for the guy to drink. But then later going back, we realize that the soldier is actually wounded and the bottle they want him to pass back is a
plasma, maybe, or like an IV.
It's a thing. It's the thing you put the needle in your
IV
hand. It's an IV bottle.
Yeah.
That he's IV.
Yeah. Pass that back here. This guy really needs it.
Yeah.
Because he's wounded.
And so they're like, well, then why was there a soldier in there? And they're like, oh, well, we stopped to pick up, you know, some soldiers and some
refugees
and some refugees.
Yeah.
And there's a group of enemy soldiers wandering nearby. So they pull off, turn off the lights. Everybody has to be quiet except for this old lady in the back she's not old, but there's a lady in the back who's got a
chicken.
She's
of childbearing age. Whoa, spoilers. Yeah,
that keeps clucking. This chicken keeps and he's like,
he screams,
shut that chicken up.
Keep that thing quiet. Yeah.
Yeah. Keep that chicken quiet. And he turns away and starts walking back, and the chicken suddenly stops clucking. And he turns and looks back, and the lady is just in tears, and she's crying.
She's holding a dead chicken.
And he's like, he killed it. And then the camera pans down. She killed it, and he pans down, and she's holding this baby that's just dead.
In order to keep everyone safe, because everyone was supposed to be quiet so they wouldn't get found by the enemy, and in order to save everybody, she smothered her own baby.
Yeah.
And actually, that's based on an actual event that happened during the Korean War, which kind of makes it even darker. Some of the writers were not even on board with putting this in the show because it seemed a little too dark. And it's pretty dark, and it's pretty shocking. And the first time you see it, it gets to you a little bit. You know, it's...
Yeah, I was watching it, and, you know, as they're going through and pulling away the layers and getting down to the real, you know, event of what had happened, I was like, this was a comedy? I was like, what?
And that moment is what I wanted you to get. Because now if you watch 30 Rock or Family Guy or Robot Chicken or Grand Theft Auto 5, all of which make chicken and baby jokes, you'll get it if you come across it.
I have never, like, I haven't watched a lot of Family Guy. I've seen probably maybe 10 or 15 episodes. I've seen maybe two or three episodes of Robot Chicken. I've never heard a chicken baby joke. Like,
but
the closest the closest I've come to that, and I'm sorry if this offends anybody who listens, is, hey Brinky, why did the dead baby cross the road?
Why?
Because it was stapled to the chicken.
Well, maybe we can. There might be a rewrite around that to make it into a MASH-like chicken and baby joke. Now, see, when I was trying to find pop culture references to the chicken and the baby, I put into Google MASH chicken and baby, and the first page was about this show that we watched. And after that, it was about raising baby chickens and feeding them MASH and recipes, things like chicken and mashed potatoes and baby carrots. Right. So maybe it's not quite as pervasive as I thought, but if you ever come across a joke like this, now you're going to get it. Now, yeah. So it was shocking. It was memorable, but was it moving? And the problem I had with it is Alan Alda. And when I was talking about moments that did move me later in the episode, I used the word understated. And I'm sorry, but Alan Alda, I like it when he's funny. I like it when he's mad. But loud sobbing is not his forte. Yeah. He ruined it.
They cut to him with him doing that crying thing, and I was like, nope, okay.
I didn't like it. His acting spoiled it for me.
I would argue that may not entirely be his fault. That is a problem with the writing, in that if they had not written that line, and if they hadn't had him say that line, it would have been a lot better.
But even no matter what the line was, his interpretation of it spoiled it.
Back and he's just teary and crying, and he just looks at Sydney, and then cut, where he doesn't say anything, it would have been fine. But they had him say, you know, we already know it's a baby.
So you think not only did
They've
his acting...
They've already shown us that. We don't need you to reiterate.
So not only did his acting spoil the moment...
You can show something or you can tell something. You should always show it.
So not only did his acting spoil the moment, but also them telling us what we just saw.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, in case you missed it,
it
wasn't really a chicken. It was a baby.
It was a baby.
Here's Alan Alda explaining to you, it wasn't a chicken.
It was a baby.
Nope. Yeah.
That ruined it for me a little. Like, I bet the first time this came on, before there were 31 years of chicken and baby jokes, I bet that was a real mindfuck. But for me...
I should ask my dad about that.
About a mindfuck?
No, about the chicken and the baby.
Hey, Dad, tell me about the chicken and the baby. What came first, the chicken or the baby? I went back and found a Facebook status that I had posted July 19th, 2011, and I wrote, spoiler alert, it wasn't a chicken, it was a baby. So, I don't know if you and I were friends yet at that point. So
2007?
2011.
Oh, 2011.
Yes.
I don't know.
Yeah. You didn't comment on it, but you wouldn't have gotten it, so who knows? So, the chicken and the baby.
All right, so that's that. Can I ask a question?
Okay.
Because, Harry Morgan at one point uses the line, this, and I wrote this line down specifically because I did not understand a bit of what it meant, and
okay.
Maybe you can explain it
sure.
to me. I feel like the biggest dunt since the monkey wrapped its tail around the flagpole.
That's just kind of he's got some down-home humor.
Okay.
That's just kind of his way that he talks.
That's a folksyism?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Yeah.
Did you
it's like
did
he
you
said that and I was like, what does that even mean?
Did you catch Blake Clark playing one of the MPs?
No.
Oh. You know who Blake Clark is?
I don't even know who Blake Clark
is. He's the voice of Slinky Dog nowadays in the Toy Story movies. He's been in other things too, but that's what comes to mind immediately.
Okay. So he took over for Jim Varney.
Yeah. Okay. So we know MASH like to mix humor and hilarity with the horrors of death and war. They like to blend these two conflicting ideas together. The idea of cracking wise when you're faced with some of the most traumatizing stuff on Earth, right?
Which, for some people, is a way to deal with yeah. traumatizing stuff,
yes.
is to make jokes about it and to be, you know.
But I wanted to tell you about something that...
Sometimes you either need to laugh or cry.
Right, that's true. But I wanted to tell you about something that's very tangentially MASH-related... that I wish I hadn't have researched for the show. So currently I live in Wasilla, Alaska, and on Palmer Wasilla Highway, there is a sign that says, in loving memory of Jamie Farr. And I smile a little bit when I see it, which is horrible, but Jamie Farr is one of the actors on the show. He played Klinger. Okay. He's not dead. This is not a sign for Corporal Klinger. Okay. So in loving memory of Jamie Farr. Uh-huh. Look at that. Jamie Farr is not dead. So I thought for this episode, I would look up what it actually meant. I wish I hadn't done that. It's a sign for a 13-year-old boy who was killed in a drunk driving crash in 1993. So, kind of feel bad now. But anyway. So.
Well, if it will absolve you of your pain, you didn't know. And, you know, you went with your experience.
That's true. So we got ourselves a little bit of attention this week. First of all, on our show page, I will embed a player for playing the show. And what I do is I upload to a website, yourlisten.com. And we actually have a follower now on Your Listen. And it's a guy named Scotty Goodman. And this is a guy, I think he's in Florida, and he makes remixes. I don't know him, do you?
I don't. No.
Well, thanks, Scotty Goodman. We're glad you like what we're doing.
Oh, I was about to say, did we get remixed?
Oh, wouldn't that be amazing? Hey, Scotty Goodman, we said your name 3 times so far. Will you remix us, please? Because
and if he's listening, let's see. Can we give him some lines for him to work into the remix?
Will you do the radio voice I was hoping for earlier? K-Mash in the morning with Chicken and the Baby.
You're listening to K-Mash in the Morning with Chicken and the Baby. Bacock!
Oh, damn, I was going to do the bacock. Okay.
Oh, okay, all right, I'll do it again. You're listening to K-Mash in the Morning with Chicken and the Baby.
Bacock!
What the hell was that?
So... this is the...
Or if you wanted to make it more like one of those stupid morning zoo things. K-Mash in the morning!
Yes.
With Chicken and the Baby!
There we go, that's what I wanted.
Okay, sorry, I didn't know. I thought you just wanted a radio voice.
Because it's a wacky morning show.
All right, you want to do it again then?
Yes.
Okay.
Do I still get to be the chicken?
You still get to be the chicken. Okay. In this episode, Tycho and Emily discuss MASH and radio shows. You're listening to K-MASH in the Morning with Chicken and the Baby.
So, Scotty Goodman, for the 4th time, if you're listening.
There you go, Scotty.
Remix us.
By the way, if you're any relation to John Goodman, we would like to, we'd like to have him on the show.
Well... you said that any dope celebrity that wanted to be on our show could go fuck themselves. This is on record, so.
Oh, okay. Well, then go fuck yourself, John Goodman.
But John Goodman can come over to your house, right?
Oh yeah, no, he can come over and hang out.
Let's go to Mardi Gras with John Goodman.
He was in The Big Lebowski. He gets a pass.
Well, the ultimate episode for us would be going to Mardi Gras with John Goodman because he does floats and stuff. So like he rides on the float, plays Bacchus. He's very sweaty.
Oh,
so I've heard. I have not gone to Mardi Gras, so that would be...
And I've never been to Mardi Gras, either, so that would be a...
this would be so great.
Be a thing for both of us.
I know. Maybe this time next year, because it's probably... it's going to be getting started here soon, so I don't think we can plan it this year, but next year could be amazing.
All right, man.
So we've also got another little thing for the scrapbook of our little baby podcast, because something happened for the first time. We got our first tweet. Aww.
Oh, I know, right?
I know, right? Except I'm reading this to you, so you're supposed to pretend to be surprised. But
okay, sorry. Let's do it.
We got tweeted at by Read It and Weep, who we discussed in our
Read It and Weep, really?
Who we discussed in our podcast episodes, and they said, "Thanks for the nice review. You guys are hilarious together." Well, wait till they hear our chicken and baby humor. You guys.
This whole episode, in fact, has not been overly funny. This is one of our more. And that's not a bad. First of all, that's not a bad thing.
Oh, wait a second. Let me finish. And your premise is brilliant. So.
Okay. Thank you.
Let's get back to the hilarity and brilliance. So, you're saying this episode has not been very funny, or the entire podcast has not been very funny.
No. I'm not saying. I'm not saying we've been trying to be funny and failing. I'm saying we've been like there isn't a whole lot of inherent humor in this episode.
Oh, in this episode.
Yeah.
Not in our podcast oeuvre altogether.
No, our podcast oeuvre is hilarious.
Okay.
And I'm sorry, I really shouldn't be doing that because that's one of the things I hate about that other podcast that I hate that I can't think of. Wham Bam Pow.
All right.
Like when they're like, "Oh, it's okay, we'll be hilarious anyway," and I'm like, "Don't
promise hilarity."
We'll talk about that when we get to Wham Bam Pow.
I mean, I put a comedy label on this when I'm uploading it to Your Listen, and also in the MP3 tag, but it might be funny, it might be not. I don't know.
I would argue we have moments of funny, and when I listen to it, once the episode gets published and downloads, when I listen to it, there are moments where I laugh. And I'm like, that actually was kind of funny, you know, so I'm happy with it.
There you go. So, what did you learn this week, Tycho? Well,
don't ever try to leave war early because you'll only get called back.
Yeah, that's true. Well, so I've brought up this idea a couple of times that you need to have seen this to complete your education, to know about it. And I think of it as required reading. You know, to be able to understand this area of our culture, you have to have seen it. So do you feel like we are under a lot of pressure, not just you and me, but everybody, a lot of pressure to have seen everything so that we can know every reference and get every joke?
No.
No?
No.
You don't feel like...
If you haven't seen everything and you don't get every reference, that's okay.
Yeah?
You don't need to. I think it's important not to be ignorant, and if somebody makes a reference and you don't get it, you know, go and look it up. And if it's something that interests you, then, you know, follow up on it. But you don't need to watch every episode of MASH in order to get, you know.
Well, I didn't assign you every episode of MASH. I assigned you this one.
Every MASH reference that is ever thrown out there. I am 33 and 3/4 years old. Well, not 3/4.
Oh, you better get on that.
33 and 2/3 years old.
You better get on that fate thing, making this your year, because you don't have a lot of time left. Yeah, how are you going to fulfill your destiny?
This is my destiny.
Aww.
Doing something I don't get paid for. I am 33 and 2/3 years old. I have never heard a reference to The Chicken and the Baby. I don't know what it was like. It's not anything that's ever registered on my radar. But
maybe it didn't make a blip on your radar because since you didn't get it, you glossed over it. So maybe now if you come across a reference to The Chicken and the Baby...
I'm going to start hearing Chicken and the Baby references everywhere.
Right, because like when I found out who Paul Lind was for the first time, I started seeing references to Paul Lind everywhere. So you don't feel like watching this episode clued you into something that you weren't familiar with before. You don't feel like it really made you a better citizen in this world where we're supposed to know all kinds of things.
I mean, not really.
You don't feel changed?
No. Like, I can now tell people, yeah, I've seen the last episode of MASH, and I liked that whole bit about Hawkeye's story and the you know, peeling back the layers of it. I really enjoyed that.
That was good storytelling.
Just completely ruined with the, it was a baby!
It was a
baby! I'm like, no, why did you do that so well?
And that's why I talked about the moment where he's watching
the... Yeah, I've seen the final episode of MASH. I haven't seen any of the other shows, so it doesn't really mean anything that I've seen the final episode of MASH, but there's that.
If we get a chance, maybe each of us can go talk to our fathers and see what they have to tell us about having watched this originally.
Do a follow-up interview?
I want to have both of our fathers on the show. I think that'd be great. Father's Day episode. A couple of months from now.
All right.
Yeah. I want each of them to bring us a suggestion of something that was hip when they were our age. And then I want you and me to team up to make them do something that's dumb and hip now. I mean, Candy Crush would have been amazing, but there are other things.
Oh, man. Okay.
What? Is your dad on board with being trotted out as a prop on his 30-something son podcast?
My dad would probably go for it.
Yeah.
We just have to, you know, figure out how to do all that. So we'll see. Like, would it be like a case of like my dad gives me something, I give my dad something, and we record an episode together, and then you and your dad do the same thing, and they're running parallel, and then we just release them both on the same day?
No, I think it would be all four of us together, and then you and I issue a singular challenge to our dads, and we can all talk about what it was. You know, listening to Beyonce or playing Candy Crush or some whatever's hip then. Playing some Flappy Bird, whatever.
Hey, Dad, here's Kanye West's new album. It's called Yeezy, where he you know, basically...
where he says he's Jesus.
Where he calls himself Jesus. And I know that you've been a good church-going Christian all your life and tried to raise me that way, but here, listen to this and tell me what you think. Nope.
Now, see, we bag on Jay-Z quite a bit. You know, he's been calling himself Jehovah for many years, right?
I did not know that.
Well, now you can hate Jay-Z for another reason, other than his poor... his poor choice of a complete breakfast. I did put some art up on our fan book page. Our Facebook page. Of a Photoshopped cereal box with Jay-Z eating Breastises for breakfast. So if you guys care to check that out and go to our Facebook page and give us a like What else can they do for us, Tycho?
They can rate us and review us on iTunes. Send us follow us on Twitter. Send us twits.
I mean, just because we've gotten one doesn't mean we're done with it. I mean, we'd accept more from fans. Give us ideas.
We have already posted more twits on our Twitter than IOC did in their entire run. So those two losers.
So tweet at us. Let us know what we should do on a future episode. That would be fine. I would like that.
Yeah. Give us suggestions if you have things that we can try, because we both have lists of stuff, but that list is steadily decreasing, even though we're constantly adding to it. Like, you know, there's different things. I guess that is about. Oh, if you want to send us an email, you can send it to.
You can send it to loneholdout@redcowentertainment.com. Redcow Entertainment is our network, where we go up against three other podcasts. Now, this is our ninth episode, and the podcast that we are in direct competition with is called Rage Quit, which is a video gaming podcast, and they only have 9 episodes. So we have 9 and a mini ep, probably more, a couple mini eps by now. So we're coming for you, Rage Quit. We're going to get those listens. We had like 17 as our high. So, I mean, 17 people listening to us do this, whatever this is.
And Ira Glass, you're next, buddy.
Yeah, first Rage Quit, next the world.
Next This American Life.
Not that we wouldn't do a crossover with Rage Quit. Maybe. Play some video games.
Well, that's an idea. That's an idea. Yeah. Like video games we haven't played before?
Yes.
Which for you would be like everything?
Yeah, well, unless we're going to talk about GoldenEye. That's
about it. GoldenEye is awesome. Don't badmouth GoldenEye. No. I will smack you.
Right, but my list is pitifully short. GoldenEye.
GoldenEye is a game you've played.
Yes.
Then in that case, we'll have to get you into Mario Kart.
Oh, no, I play Mario Kart. I do enjoy Mario Kart.
Okay. Mario Kart Wii U comes out in a couple months. I'm so excited.
You're going to get a Wii U, or do you have one already?
I have a Wii U.
Oh, okay.
Cool. I got the Wii U. The Wii U recently did a bundle pack where they dropped the price and included a free copy of The Legend of Zelda Wind Waker HD. And I was like, done. That's when I'll get my Wii U. Because I've been holding off on getting a Wii U. I normally hold off on getting a new console for like 4 years until the next console is released and the console drops in price. So I just recently got a PlayStation 3.
So you stopped holding out, and that's what the show is all about.
Yep.
So, Tycho, until next time.
Don't cook naked.
Don't cook naked. Good night. Good night.
Chicken and the baby!